Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, are the two compatriots of mine, Mr. Chad Riley and Spencer Williams.
Bonjour.
Hey, hey, hey.
Bonjour and hey, hey, hey.
You know, something different.
That definitely was different. And speaking of different, we got a unique show for you today, as we're not going and looking towards what's coming out, but we're actually looking at something that already came out a few years back. And holds a special place in our heart.
So, a very special place.
It does. And we'll tell
I'm
you
getting what. Getting all teary-eyed.
We'll get into that in just a bit. Before we do, Chad, give him a little bit of those opening credits.
Sure. No matter how often we break the fourth wall, the Filmlosophers podcast is still presented by Mingle Media TV and recorded live each week at VGB Studios. Subscribe to the Filmlosophers podcast on your favorite streaming platforms and enjoy all the privileges of membership without paying us a dime. Because we don't really have a membership. New episodes debut each Wednesday on Libsyn, Spotify, Audioboom, Google Play, Player FM, Stitcher, and iTunes.
X gonna give it to ya, but only if you join the
what?
Conversation.
Where did that come from?
It's on the notes.
Well, I don't read the notes. Who reads the notes?
I did.
Okay, go
Be
ahead.
Be sure to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers and follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Finally, don't think you have to limit yourself to just this one episode. You can access our entire library of great content on our website at filmlosophers.com.
Filmlosophers.com, that's right. You can head over there and listen to every single episode, all 112
plus.
Actually, 113, once we're done with this
one. Once we're done with this one.
I mean,
no guarantees. We're just getting started.
I'm just saying, you know, just... Yeah, so head on to Filmlosophers after you listen to this episode, because we got something to say today, tonight, right now, in this moment, here.
In this general vicinity.
That's right. Mm.
This
Don't give me that look, Spencer.
We call a podcast.
We call a podcast.
This isn't a podcast.
You know what? I actually...
It's a pod experience.
Wow. Yes. What? Oh, there are times that? When I wish that this could be live televised video or something.
I Your am face glad it is not
the expressiveness of Spencer Williams in that moment. A pod experience.
I'll tell
I
you
mean,
what.
Arms, eyes, eyebrows. Yeah.
Well, jumping off of that little moment here, that's right. We're going to be talking about a film that actually debuted a few years back. So sit back, relax, and go back to 2016, shall we? As you are, I don't know what happened in 2016. No, but a couple years ago, myself and Chad were in the middle of a theater, and we were watching a film with a bunch of other guys.
The exact middle. We always go for the best spot.
100%. And we went to go... see the film with the Video Game Bang crew, and after watching the film, we ended up going and doing a show with that team, and we talked about the film, and we're like, you know what? This dynamic could work as a podcast on its own. Little did we know.
Lo and behold.
Exactly. 2 years, two years later, and here we are, back at the start of it all. We are talking about 2016's Deadpool. Chad, why don't you give him a little bit of that official
synopsis?
First of
all, I just want to say, that kind of in a way means, not to be weird, but Deadpool kind of gave birth to the Filmlosophers.
That sounds creepy.
I know, it does.
It's the nature of things. I mean, hey, movies are...
What do they say? Odd... Don't knock it till you tried it?
Exactly. Mm. Don't give us that look. You're part of this group, too.
Yeah, but... I don't have a Deadpool origin story.
You do have a Deadpool origin story. Because you're just unique.
We all come from the same place, Spencer.
From Wade Wilson?
From a careless whisper.
Careless whisper. Wade Wilson is a former Special Forces operative who now works as a mercenary. His world comes crashing down when evil scientist Ajax, also known as Francis, tortures, disfigures, and transforms him into Deadpool. The rogue experiment leaves Deadpool with accelerated healing powers and a twisted sense of humor, although he really had that part before. With help from mutant allies Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead, Deadpool uses his new skills to hunt down the man who nearly destroyed his life.
I have to admit, we rewatched this film this past weekend, and I had forgotten how funny that movie was. Like,
I mean, from the beginning.
From the get-go, it is such a gem to rewatch, and it saddens me that we haven't rewatched it sooner, but we're here now. So, directed by Tim Miller, the film stars Ryan Reynolds in the title role alongside Morena Baccarin, Ed Skrin, TJ Miller, Gina Carano, Brianna Hildebrandt, and Stefan Kapicic.
I love it. Eddie's just like, I'm just going to say all this really fast, so if it's wrong, you can deal with it.
Exactly. I have no idea how to say
it. I kind of felt like I was in the middle of a Californian sketch on SNL for a second there.
Tre? Just get out of the five and get out of here. No, that kind of, never mind.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was close.
It's good. Fred Armisen, is that you?
Buzz about the film started. Oh, the film Deadpool is actually based on the Marvel comic character of the same name and debuted exactly 25 years after Deadpool's first appearance in New Mutants number 98. So if you're a comic book fan, 2016.
Which we all are.
Which every single one of us are. Is, can be, will be.
Will
there's hope for you, Spence. How?
You know, it's interesting because this was not the first debut of the character.
No, oh, gosh. Not at all.
It wasn't even the first debut of Ryan Reynolds as the character. That distinction goes to, well, X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Which nobody here talks about, thank God. We're all smarter than that and better. Better palettes than that.
Well, and smartly, this film, Deadpool, actually pokes fun at that and some other things.
Oh, 100%.
Pop culture reference-wise.
The buzz about the film actually started back in 2014 when some quote-unquote leaked footage made its way online, giving fans a small taste of what was possible if a Deadpool film was made. Fans ate it up.
I totally remember this happening. Mm-hmm. People went crazy.
Yeah.
Like, wait a minute. You have footage that is this high quality about Deadpool, which people have, you know, wanted a Deadpool movie for a long time by that point. And suddenly...
And this is years
here
after.
Here it is, and it's so good.
And years after, obviously, like we were mentioning, the X-Men Origins Wolverine debacle. People actually wanted to see a decent portrayal of him and not the monster we got at the end of that film.
Well, and it's so nice that Reynolds stuck around. I mean, he was a big fan of the character heading into the Wolverine movie, the debacle, but he stuck with the character. He wanted to do it right.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually the executives at Fox kind of got on board and they worked together to make this film.
Well, and even then, at that point, while the film was being made, the studios honestly weren't too sure as to the viability of the project after they got it going, because there was even a point in time where the writers were no longer receiving paychecks from Fox. So Ryan Reynolds himself actually paid out of pocket to keep the writers on set every day for the whole filming of that film, of Deadpool. Out of pocket. And there were two writers. So... that's pretty cool in my mind, because you can tell through that the how committed Ryan Reynolds was to making sure this story was told properly, told well.
It totally shows too. I mean, you can see what is it? What maximum effort?
Yeah, that's right? The beginning of the film.
But like, really, honestly effort. Though, like Deadpool the character says maximum effort numerous times in the film, but really, like behind the scenes, the performer himself, Ryan Reynolds, really brought maximum effort.
Oh,
for a long time before the movie was even greenlit or anything. I mean, he stuck with this thing for years.
And it's so weird. I mean, obviously we'll get into the film in a second, but is it just me, or was it like Ryan Reynolds was born to play this particular role? It seems like...
Well, it feels more like Deadpool is slowly just ripping apart Ryan Reynolds and taking over his life.
You mean kind of like how every other superhero actor is becoming now? Like, you don't see Robert Downey Jr. anymore, you see Tony Stark?
No, correction, you see Robert Downey Jr., Iron Man.
There you go, what he said. Deadpool became the first R-rated movie to have a three-day opening weekend of over $100 million at the U.S. box office. That says something there. Deadpool creator Rob Liefeld has been open about the fact that he took the name for the character from the final Dirty Harry movie, 1988's The Deadpool. So that's a little nod to the creation of this character. But no.
Well, not to mention the entire purpose of the character, which is a knockoff of a character from the other universe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not a knockoff. He's a spoof version of Slade
Deathstroke
Wilson from DC.
Which is so funny. Yeah. So, like we said, this movie holds a special place in the filmlosopher's heart of hearts because, as we stated, Deadpool was the film that ultimately, as Chad so eloquently put it, gave birth to this podcast. It was through the reviewing of that film that we had decided we should create this show and consistently, weekly, give content where we can talk about movies. Because we obviously here all love comics, we all here love movies, and it just seemed like lightning in a bottle for all of us to be at the table at that time and be like, this could work, plain and simple.
And so, it has.
And it has worked. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like we said previously, as the show has grown, we've also grown here as a family, and we've brought in Mr. Spencer as well. So that's always a big plus. But this film itself is such a unique film because of the fact that nobody at the time had really created a film that actually, number one, the character actually fit the profile of the comic book character so well, like this. Like, you can literally see how well these two were made for each other. And secondly, you create a film that transcends the rift between certain studios that work in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not so much as the main one, but the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe. Because, obviously, like we said, Deadpool was created by Fox. You still had everything from Disney, Marvel, and yet Deadpool was kind of going all over the place in terms of references and whatnot.
Well, Deadpool is an incredibly, incredibly unique character, even in the paper, you know, pages of the comic books, because he breaks the fourth wall. He has self-awareness. As a created character on the page,
yeah,
he knows that he's a character in a story. And sometimes he has multiple personalities. Other times he's more lucid than any of the other characters because he actually will turn to you as the reader and talk to you directly. Mm-hmm. He knows he's a character in a comic book and he references it to you. And then here, obviously, they've incorporated that in the film to great effect. He regularly does these little aside moments and speaks straight into the camera at us, you know, sitting, you know, at first and sitting in a movie theater and then eventually sitting at home watching it. But yeah, I mean, to your point, he talks about whatever he wants to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that he exists outside of the context of this film and this story. So he talks about Ryan Reynolds as if he's a different guy, right? Like Ryan yeah. Reynolds, the performer. He talks about former roles that Ryan Reynolds has played. He talks about Hugh Jackman. He talks about which Professor Xavier. Are you talking McAvoy or Stewart?
Yeah.
You know, like just all these sort of meta references that are really delightful. If you catch all of them or even half of them, I think. If you know half of them, then you're going to have a pretty fun time if you haven't seen the movie yet.
So, coming into this film, obviously we can't go through the whole shebang of like expectations and all because we've already seen the film. But what we can do is, jumping into this review, kind of talk about, so what adaptations have been up until that point? So obviously around by 2016, which wasn't too long ago, we're looking at 2 years ago, there had already been 8 years worth of Marvel films. There had already been at least three DC films. Yeah, there was three DC films by, you know, 2016. No, maybe two. Sorry. And then you had so many different interpretations of X-Men by this point. You know, you had...
Oh, yeah, X-Men as a franchise had been going for 16 years already.
Yeah, because you're looking at the original, which was with, you know, like kind of like you were saying, with Patrick Stewart, Hugh Jackman, you know, you had all those, Halle Berry, all them from that crew. And then you had the revamp version, which was the younger version with James McAvoy. You know, Michael Fassbender, Jennifer Lawrence. See.
They've had some big names in these movies.
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Man, I was just agreeing.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. So what I wanted to see was at the time when it came to adaptations, there was already a kind of set expectation for most of these films. I mean, you knew you were going to get some variation of the story. Obviously, Civil War was coming out that same year. So by then, there was a lot of understanding of what was going to happen in Civil War. Obviously, Civil War, which if you don't know, I'm talking about Captain America Civil War, the third Captain America film, lends itself from the title of an actual series that was going on in the comics.
Sure.
And that run obviously had a very unique ending to it, resulting in a very big upset and almost a changing of the guard, if you will, with that series. A lot of people expected that to happen in this Civil War, which it didn't. And we have a friend of ours, and we reference him quite a bit, but he's just so fun to poke at, who got so upset because one of the villains died early in the film, and he was so upset that they weren't going to do what he wanted to do. And he's a DC fan. We pray for him. But either way...
You have our deepest sympathies.
At the time, you knew that people were going to be taking their own interpretations of a lot of these. And then comes Deadpool. And although it's not an exact adaptation, the character, in my mind, seems straight out of the comic books. Like, the way it's portrayed, the way Ryan Reynolds does it, I just feel like there's so much that literally could fit right into those panels from what we see in the films.
It's definitely not an example of, you know, like, for example, Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark and Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. has his own charisma, his own, like, personality and cadence even to the way that he carries himself on screen. And once that performance was so well received, they changed the comic book character to be more like the movie version because people liked him so much. In the comics, he's not always a likable guy. We've talked about that before. But here, really, there was no need to change the comic book character Deadpool, as if he ever would. There's no reason to change him to fit the performance because what happened here was kind of a really beautiful, in an odd way, because it's so vulgar and crass, this movie.
Yeah.
But kind of a beautiful homage performance of, like, you know, there's a reason why Deadpool is such a well-liked character in the comics. Why would you change that?
Yeah.
So they lean into it instead. It feels like the character from the pages has come to life in three dimensions on the big screen. And that was extraordinary.
Oh, 100%. And that kind of lends back to, like we were saying earlier, the test footage. I mean, that test footage really threw everybody for a loop because of the fact of how closely, just in that little bit, the test footage worked so well for comic book fans, for people who knew who Wade Wilson was, for people who knew who Deadpool was, and knowing the whole saga and with X-Force and everything, seeing that little, what was it, like, a 2-minute clip was gold because not only did it look like him, but it sounded like him. It acted like him. Everything just fit the bill. 100%.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was, and the other thing to keep in mind, you mentioned earlier that this film made $100 million in its first three weekends. The footnote to that is in February.
Yeah.
This was not a summer release. Mm-hmm. It was not a fall release. It was not a Christmas time like when people are out of school and they have more money to spend. It was Valentine's Day.
That's true.
Like, and their marketing campaign was extraordinarily funny heading into that as well. Not even all funny. I mean, a lot of it was actually played for, like, played as though it was serious. Like, this is a romance. This is a love story. Like, it was really playing up that dynamic, even though all of us who are in the know about the character are looking at it like, wait a minute, this is Deadpool.
This is not
There's
a
no
Valentine's
way,
Day movie.
Right? So it made $100 million around Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
That was an eye-opening moment for all the studios, really, in terms of they never really had looked at Valentine's Day as a viable early start, like pre-summer blockbuster season. Is this a time frame where we could make a lot of money with a potential blockbuster film? Nobody ever really looked at February or even March or even April, the beginning part of April. But here comes Deadpool waltzing right in here with his curse words and his foul, like, crass insinuations and his joking and his breaking of the fourth wall and all mm-hmm. the violence and everything, and people ate it up. People loved it.
100%. And it's unique to say, I mean, if you don't fully grasp, not only was it being in February part of the Valentine's Day, you know, time frame of it, not only was that the unique part about it, but it was early in the year. If you're familiar, if you've been listening for any time, or if you're familiar with award season, once the new year comes in, not many great movies come out in January or February, because at the end of February is usually when the Oscars come out. Everybody's campaigning for movies from the previous year. Nobody's really putting money down for large films to debut in the beginning of the year, because nobody's going to remember them by the time the end of the year happens.
Well, and all the people can't do press junkets because they're at all the awards ceremonies standing in on the red carpet.
So for this film to make that much amount of money in that opening weekend, it's insane. Spence, when did you become aware of Deadpool?
Oh, with the test footage.
Really?
Yeah, because I just heard vaguely of him before that. So I watched the test footage, and I was like, oh, this seems great. And then I realized it was with Fox, and then I was very confused because Fox hadn't really done anything I felt good for a while at that point. And so even though this footage seemed like it was going to be really awesome, it was still by Fox. And so I didn't know how to feel about it, honestly.
Spence was still mad about them canceling his Firefly. So
I didn't want it to be a bait and switch. Oh, it could be this. Oh, no, it's going to be the same garbage we always have every year.
Well, and that leads to when they were talking about the film and April Fool's Day came around, and they did a fake press conversation with Ryan Reynolds, who said the film was going to be rated PG-13 when everybody had been told the film was going to be rated R. And it's really interesting how that whole thing comes around, because then you have Deadpool come out and I think he kills Ryan Reynolds, or he kills Mario Lopez. He kills one of them.
Oh, right. I remember that.
And then they totally, switched on you it's definitely going to be an R film or whatever. But I feel you on that, because we were just, so me and Chad, we were watching some trailers that were on YouTube a little bit ago, and
because that's what we do.
It's what we do. I mean, and when we were watching a trailer for a really interesting TV series, and during the entire trailer itself, I was like, oh, this looks good. It looks interesting.
I know where you're going with this. It was a funny moment.
And then right towards the middle or ending last third of the trailer, it says, brought to you by Fox or something like that. I'm like, oh, poo.
Yeah, you lost all enthusiasm in a moment.
And then the thing ends up and I'm like, this looks so good too. And Chad looked at me and I'm like, because now I know it's going to get one season and then Fox is going to get confused with the demo and then they're going to cancel it.
Whacked.
And then it'll come back 7 years later as a cult classic. But it's true. Fox is not known for taking big risks, taking the chance on something that's completely outside of its comfort zones. And that's what Deadpool is. Deadpool is kind of that stretch beyond. And
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got a hard R-rated pseudo-superhero film.
Yeah. And it's not like it's for all ages, as opposed to like what Disney is doing.
Right.
Disney is marketing their stuff more for everybody. This is a very specific age group of comic book fans and nerds, if I'm just going to be honest. This is what Deadpool was made for. So that kind of pigeonholes a little bit of how many people, like how much money they were going to make. And in my mind, that's knowing Fox, that seemed like the first red flag in my mind for like what they were thinking about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't. The television arm of Fox's whole organization, that is definitely a thing. I mean, they take big risks on properties that the other studios won't take risks on, or other networks won't bother trying to air. And Fox will give them a place, but then, as you mentioned, they get cold feet. They don't see the rating spike they were hoping for, and they axe them, you know, with no hesitation, really. I mean, they're just like, as soon as your numbers drop, you're gone. But that's the TV side of things. I think on the movie side of things, they've definitely seen more success. Obviously, I'm a big fan of the X-Men film franchise, even if there have been a couple of duds in there, and there have. But they took a risk on that. They kind of reignited, not kind of, they reignited the superhero movie genre. It had gone dark after Batman and Robin, which that was a total disaster. And so, you know, there was a lot of hesitation among all the studios for trying anything even remotely like that again. And then here's this opportunity, you know, from the Marvel Comics IPO, intellectual property, you know, and what, or IP, intellectual property. And they bought the rights to the X-Men. They bought the rights to the Fantastic Four, a few others, and they made X-Men because it had been so successful throughout the 90s. They had, in many places, it was Fox affiliates that had aired the X-Men cartoon series Saturday mornings and sometimes in the afternoons as, you know, second run. And so they knew that there was an audience of some sort, and they gave it a chance. And they haven't stopped making the movies, even though they've had a couple duds. They've been very consistent. They've been more consistent, numerically speaking, than any of the individual franchises in the MCU. Granted, when you take all the franchises of the MCU and you put them together, you get more movies than we've had X-Men movies. But I mean, X-Men has had quite a few, including you know, the First Class, you know, the prequel spinoff deal, and now Deadpool, and you've got what, New Mutants in the works doing reshoots. And
well, and then you had, well, with those spinoffs, I mean, you had the First Class, obviously, spinoffs, but then you also had the Wolverine spinoffs.
Sure.
And then you had the Logan final film of that saga. I mean, there's a good chunk of films that are in there.
They've been trying to get Gambit for a long, long time.
True.
Started up.
I mean, you're looking at least 18 years of film for Fox alone. And
that's based on release date. If you went into like pre-production production, you'd be above 20.
Yeah. So, like we said, jumping in, one of the things that's unique about this film, one of the things that Chad has mentioned about this particular film franchise, because now there is a franchise, if you're unaware, there is a sequel to this film debuting this upcoming Friday. And obviously, before we got into talking about that one, reviewing this one seemed like kind of a refresher course.
Well, and it was so funny because we're sitting around scratching our heads and we're like, well, didn't we already review this movie? And technically, Eddie, you and I did, but it wasn't on this podcast.
It wasn't for the podcast.
It would have been. It predates the Filmlosophers.
It's like our prequel episode because it's right.
It is.
It's right before the first time we actually did our main episode, which was on a whole different film.
And we didn't have Spencer at the time.
And we didn't have
so
Spencer.
So why deprive Spencer of the opportunity to review this movie?
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So Spencer, we're going to give you the rest of the episode. Good luck.
Go ahead. Yeah. I got to go bathroom. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's going to work out real well for everyone. Lose all the subscribers.
Bye, Spencer.
No. So jumping into the film, obviously, the film doesn't really start like most normal films. This film actually starts at the midway point of the entire movie.
One of the best, most memorable opening credit sequences ever.
Which, if you saw that leaked footage, it's similar in terms of what that was about. Like, a lot of that is, you know, gone into more further detail, and there's obviously a lot more polishing done. There's a lot more, they're not just like weird looking clone bodies that are in the leak, like the leaked footage. So it's much like that, but you have this great little slow motion collage of clips of things that are happening.
Yeah, it's a crazy terrible car accident on a freeway.
But the thing that stands out the most in that isn't so much as what's happening in the screen, but what's happening with the credits, which hasn't really been done, in my opinion. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Nothing like that.
I've never seen anything like that.
And it's so great. It's so funny. It's the establishing of the tone for the rest of the film, because the credits are just this like, oh yeah, and it's starring some handsome guy and a beautiful girl and a jerk and... Not in so many nice words.
No, I was going to say, colorful. It's a little more colorful the way that they put it.
But that kind of
But basically, yeah, they're making fun of themselves right off the bat.
100%.
Including, like, what was it? A Green Lantern trading card and an issue of People magazine
with
Ryan Reynolds on it. And, you know, like, it's just from the get-go, before anybody starts really saying or doing anything, you're in this slow motion horrendous car accident, like slow, like just almost suspended animation slow.
Oh, 100%.
And it's all like of these irreverent credits materializing as you're spinning and diving and climbing and whatever. And
there's no respecter of persons here, because it's making fun of everybody from the starring role, which is Ryan Reynolds, all the way to the director. Like, through all the credits. It's not just like, oh, and then at some point it gets back to normal. It's like that throughout the entire opening credits. But obviously we kind of speed things back up and we get to things that are normal, where you see a little bit of Deadpool's personality and his character. And I know we've talked about it already, but how awesome is just Ryan Reynolds as this character? It's almost like you were saying, Spence, they're pretty much practically undiscernible. Like, you can't really tell where Ryan Reynolds ends and where Deadpool begins. And I think that's a dangerous place to
be. I was going
to
say, that's an interesting thing to say about Ryan Reynolds.
Well, because, I mean, if you look at all the rest of his films, so prior to Deadpool 2016, everything else he had done before then wasn't really substantial. I mean, he did The Proposal with Sandra Bullock, which we had talked about last episode, briefly. He did that movie Selfless that we saw here, with him and Ben Kingsley. Mm-hmm. And he did Buried. Obviously, he did the Green Lantern.
Well, he's done a lot of interesting indie projects, too. I mean, Buried is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one where he's like the figment of the guy's imagination who's trying to
Jeff
write a
Daniels
story?
And, yeah.
Paper Man or Paper something. And there's what, The Nines, where he's playing different versions of himself. It's some sort of play on quantum physics. There's been a lot there. What was the one with the talking animals and he was a serial killer, or they were serial killers or something?
No, they talked to him and they would tell him to do stuff. I know what you're talking about. I mean,
so he's been no stranger to
he was in RIPD
the beaten path kind of stuff. Yeah. Well,
100%. But a lot of them had...
Of course, I remember him still from Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place with Nathan Fillion.
Yep.
And I don't remember the girl's name. Or the other guy, actually. Nathan Fillion was actually not one of the two guys. He just was there a lot.
But I'm actually, while we're talking, I'm looking through a lot of his stuff. And a lot of it is just like, it seems like you see the glimpses of what makes the whole. Like you look at his role from Blade Trinity, where he plays.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He plays similar role to this. He was in Waiting, where he played a similar role to in aspects of his humor. You know, Waiting was like that. Just Friends. He was in Smoking Aces, where you could see a lot of his action ability and whatnot. So it's interesting because a lot of the films that he's been in have been pieces of this character that he's been building.
Pieces of Deadpool. Slowly congealing on a wall somewhere.
And then you bring everything that he's done in every film from like the seriousness, like in Amityville Horror. He was in a horror film.
And right.
I remember going to the theater to see that one. Amityville Horror, you take the seriousness, you take his ridiculousness, like from RIPD and The Change Up and Paperman. Paperman was the film.
That's it, Paperman.
And you just bring them all together into one congealed red mass, and you have Deadpool. And it fits, like, creepily well, if that's a word. I don't think it's a word. Is it a word? No.
It is now.
Here you go. Creepily well.
Creepily. Well, they're two words. Creepily well. Also, I mean, major kudos to this guy, because who ever has been such a like go-getter, hard worker in terms of marketing the films, both of them. Mm-hmm. Deadpool 2 comes out this weekend. He's been doing every bit as much work behind the scenes, after production, and et cetera, to market Deadpool 2 as he ever did with Deadpool 1.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Granted, he is one of the executive producers of both, so he's definitely on both sides of the camera. But, yeah, I mean, he suits up. He does special appearances. He enlists Hugh Jackman, David Beckham, other, you know, prominent people to help promote the movies. And
he's also on the writing staff as well.
He goes all in, which is rare. It's rare for the main performer to do that much on the marketing side. That's not like cut scenes from the movie. Like, they are completely unique, all new scenes only for marketing purposes.
Well, I think that's also what makes it so great, because like with Deadpool's marketing, I check it out.
Yeah.
Versus other marketing where I'm like, eh, whatever. Like, whenever something new comes like with Deadpool, I'm like, okay, what's he doing this time? Oh, no, he's singing in, like, Korean? Okay.
I'm in.
Yeah.
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 Spence is in for that.
Well, and it's all together. It's really cool to see the commitment level of the performers in films. It's much more of a refreshing feeling as a moviegoer, as somebody who loves to go and see movies, to see the performer so committed to wanting people to fully grasp how much of an experience they're going to get when they come and see the film. And that goes, I mean, it's totally recognized once you see the film about how much fun they're having, how much fun he's having, how much fun it seems like all the performers are having when you're watching the movie after seeing all the marketing stuff. And
really it does. I mean, it's brilliant because you look at those marketing pieces and you're like, what in the world is this? Like, it's funny. It's weird. I'm not sure what's going on, but I sure as heck am going to be in that movie theater because you've piqued my curiosity.
Mm-hmm. So jumping forward, moving on with more of the characters that are in the film. I mean, obviously you have other people other than Deadpool, Wade Wilson, but you also are introduced to Vanessa, who is played by
Baccarin, I think.
Hey, don't
from Firefly, Spencer. Yes. There's a Fox Television reference.
See, Fox threw her a bone. Quit being mean. What'd you say?
I said eventually.
Eventually.
Also, wasn't she in Gotham?
She still is in Gotham.
She was, well, at the time, though, I think that's how they...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They got her to contribute here. Interestingly enough, in the comics, the character with her name is also, I believe, a mutant, but is also superpowered in a certain way. So It'll be interesting to see if they work that in at any future point in the storyline.
We're also introduced to T.J. Miller's character, who happens to be the bartender.
Weasel.
Who plays Weasel. And then you have Colossus, and which I'm not going to say that guy's name again. And then you have Negasonic Teenage Warhead, who's played by Hildebrand. So you have all these particular characters, and you're introduced to them right at the get-go, as soon as you know all this stuff is unfolding in that opening scene. Because here's the unique thing about that opening scene. The scene actually pauses at certain points and does flashbacks. And
yeah, it interrupts itself to tell you earlier parts of its own story.
Yeah, and if you're not aware of what a fourth wall break is, this film is probably going to be your best example of fourth wall breaks within fourth wall breaks, to quote Deadpool. That's like 16 breaks, I think you said?
Yeah, something like that.
But like we said, you're introduced to more characters, which you're introduced to two particular X-Men characters that I'm not too sure what the reasoning was to allow them to be in the film, or at least Colossus.
Who knows? quite frankly, as a comic book fan, looking at the actual like footage promos for movie trailers before Deadpool came out, you looked at it and you're like, who? What? Why are they putting these characters together? They're never together, like almost ever in the comics.
Where does resident comic book?
Yeah.
Expert, where does Negasonic Teenage Warhead hail from? Like, where is her origins, and is she?
Oh goodness, now you're testing me. She was, she wasn't around for very long because she, I believe, blew herself up.
that's like comforting to know.
She exploded too powerfully, and she became a specter of herself. I think she's like a ghost. She looks totally different in the comics, by the way. She's It looks nothing like what the movie version looks like. Also, doesn't have a quarter of the personality of the movie version. So the movie version of that character is far superior.
Really?
Way cooler, yeah.
Are you for real? Because the girl doesn't say much in the film.
But she's got so much sass, so much attitude, okay. And just like, she doesn't have to say much because she's got it like just totally figured out. And is the perfect kind of like foil to Deadpool's like clownishness in the scenes that they share together, because she basically doesn't ever get baited into any kind of interaction with him. He tries and tries and tries, and she finds way to sort of skirt what he's trying to get her to do interpersonally, interactively.
So
Colossus will engage him. No, in the movie.
Oh, okay, you're talking about the movie. Okay.
No, they never appear together in the comics because she doesn't exist anymore. She does, but she's disembodied version of herself.
She Patrick Swayze'd herself.
if in fact I'm remembering the right character, it's possible that I'm not. But no, she in the comics, we haven't seen this in the movies as of yet. But in the comics, the world has a nation called Genosha that is eventually a haven for mutants, and eventually Magneto is its ruler, and eventually it's complicated, but this like parasitic former twin of Charles Xavier, who is female but also bald and creepy looking, unleashes an enormous insectoid sentinel killer robot on Genosha and basically kills almost everyone on the island, with a few exceptions. And Negasonic Teenage Warhead was, I believe, on the island when that happened, but she still exists in some sort of spectral form.
Okay.
So anyway, has nothing to do with the character that you see in the movie, who has a similar power set, which is pretty cool. And then, like I said, so much more personality even while she's being quiet. And just represents a fantastic counterpoint to all of Deadpool's zaniness in the scenes that they're in together. Colossus is here, finally Russian, finally enormous, because before he was just like a normal bodybuilder dude who happened to be American for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, the actor's Canadian, but But this guy, he's huge, super built, and very Russian. Just more true to the emotional state and psychology of that character in the comics.
Yeah.
This felt like a more authentic Colossus than we have seen previously.
Which, if I'm correct, Mr. Expert,
yeah,
if I'm correct, Colossus himself has a very interesting and deep backstory that has yet to kind of been tapped into.
Yeah, I mean, his individual backstory isn't super extreme, but both of his siblings have very interesting backstories. And if they follow the comics, then one of the prominent characters in the New Mutants film that comes out next year is his younger sister, Ilyana, who goes by the code name Magic. And so Colossus and Magic are siblings. They also have an older brother, who was like a Russian cosmonaut and has a different power set and kind of goes crazy sometimes. Peter, Colossus, he doesn't really have a super intense backstory. Their family was a family of farmers. He was a quiet farm boy who could basically lift the farm equipment and control it himself, because he's so strong and turns into steel. So, he doesn't have a super complicated backstory, but his sister is, a whole different animal altogether. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with her in New Mutants next year. And it'll be interesting to see if the movie versions of those two characters are siblings the way that they are in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, to speak back a little bit briefly back into this combo of characters, you never, ever see these characters together, which is what made the film so delightful. I mean, unlike a lot of the other stories that we've seen that are based on a specific storyline in the comics, Deadpool was not really. My knowledge, Deadpool and Vanessa, Copycat, are never an item. Or if they are, it's very brief. Mm. It's definitely not the like passionate love story, quirky, whatever thing that it is in this movie. So a lot of movie Deadpool, I'd say tonally, looks and feels like Deadpool from the comics, but everything about his story has been enhanced and given a little bit more, like the emotional stakes are a bit stronger. I guess you could say the overall flow of the story kind of makes more sense than Deadpool tends to do. I mean,
yeah,
you know, in a way, life imitates art with Deadpool. And his art is to just be random and unpredictable. So his storylines tend to do the same thing. This movie, because it was made to partially appeal to a mainstream audience, needed to follow some sort of cohesive structure, which I think actually made it better than if you were to borrow any single storyline from the comics and try to use that as Deadpool's origin. I think it would definitely have fallen flat. So I think they were smart to give it a little more emotional grounding, and more relatability.
Yeah.
Because he's entertaining, but he's not really very relatable.
No, and I think that the unique part about Deadpool, in terms of comic-wise, his progression in terms of his lacks and ability to be more humoristic than to be more bloodthirsty in the earlier years of his run, he's gotten a little bit more comedic in the comic books. I mean, it's a little bit more of a funnier take on a lot of what he's doing.
Yeah, he was originally a cold-blooded
killer.
Assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the way up until his recent passing, which was in Secret Wars, and then his coming back to life, like all comic book heroes that we know.
Right. Don't even get started on Deadpool. Deadpool supersedes any kind of, like, Deadpool is himself his own loophole.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he's like, they've got storylines where he
He's killed the entire Marvel...
He tries to kill every version of himself from every corner of the multiverse. He's tried to kill every other character in the Marvel Universe, all because he's tired of being written by people.
Mm-hmm.
He's beyond.
Yeah.
As a property, he's beyond.
And one of the things that makes Deadpool so unique in this particular film, one of the standout parts about him, obviously, is his ability to break the fourth wall. Now, we've actually done an episode on breaking the fourth wall when we talked about Ferris Bueller, and we kind of went into depths about what that means. So if you want a kind of more educational understanding of what the fourth wall means, head over to our Filmlosophers page, and you can check out the episode that we have.
Basically, it means the character talks to the audience.
Yeah.
He or she will, like, stop participating in the scene that you see and will address you knowing that you're sitting there watching the movie.
But in this particular film, this action, this moment of him turning to the audience and actually recognizing you, who is the viewer, is so recognized as part of the comics because he does it frequently, as we just talked about, him wanting to kill the whole Marvel universe and all the writers and editors. But I think it's so funny and so fresh to see it back into a cinematic approach, because obviously we've talked about it before, Ferris Bueller, that was kind of the last time that I had seen it ever done well. I mean, there had been other places where people turned and looked at the camera, oh, that was a funny thing, or they've done little nods, but never has a character in a film actually addressed the viewer of the film itself. And then in walks Deadpool. And I think it's such a great aspect to who this character is. Him, like you said, not being held by the physics of a normal comic book character in the comic book universe. It transcends that to where, like you said, Deadpool is kind of his complete own thing. Not even being held by the confines of being in a four-walled panel.
Yeah. Well, and it's just executed so well in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Spencer, what were some of your standout parts for the film with his breaking the fourth wall?
Well, I think it's that normally when, like, other movies do fourth wall breaks, you know, they just talk to you and then they go back to the scene. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, like, he'll talk to you and then other people will be like, who are you talking to?
Or, yeah.
I can still hear you. And it's like, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so amazing.
Yeah. And I think ever since the Deadpool film kind of showed that it can be done in this modern generation of filmmaking, I think it's becoming more and more of a common thing in the opportunities that film or TV can allow it. Because, you know, we had, what was that series? House of Cards, where the Kevin Spacey character constantly turned and broke the fourth wall to talk to the audience about what was happening in the actual scene itself. Now, obviously, the other people in the room didn't look at him and be like, Mr. President, who are you talking to? It wasn't like that. It was him taking a second away from the storyline. But I think what makes Deadpool so unique is that he doesn't take a second away from what's happening here. Everything's still happening. He's just aware that
he just sees you.
Exactly.
And talks to you.
I think one of the funniest ones that I've seen in the film was the scene where he finds the gentleman in the black suit that first recruited him and has him pinned against the car and is going to interrogate him. But before he does, he turns and looks at the camera and he actually puts his hand on the camera and he's like, you might want to turn away for this. And he turns the camera away and it's like the dude touched the camera. Okay. So he knows there's a camera in front of
yeah.
him. Like I said, it's just so unique and so refreshing to see that type of filmmaking and to see somebody who's comfortable doing that kind of stuff. I mean, not every actor or performer can say, oh, well, yeah, I have no problem turning and addressing the people who are watching this film, because then what'll happen there? What happens to the overall dynamic of the film?
Well, and let's not even stop there. I mean, there are very few performers who can act primarily through a suit.
Yeah.
Like Ryan Reynolds can do, Green Lantern notwithstanding.
That was CG.
So, well, yeah, but I mean, still. But Deadpool is mostly fully masked, like fully head to toe covered in the suit. So in terms of like his posture, the tone of his voice, the way that he cocks his head sideways or whatever, the way that he dances or flies through the air or whatever, like all of it, it's a complete performance. I mean, it's almost, quite frankly, the audio track was probably redubbed later and the clean version, like the cleaned up, you know, fully rounded audio version was done in a studio. So essentially he's miming.
Oh, 100%.
To great effect.
But and even more so than that, like, because we mentioned obviously the CG suit from Green Lantern, but talking about CG, even his eyes were a part of that expression of his, you know, his emotions, his, you know, excitement, his anticipation, his anger, his awe and gasp, you know, like when that scene where the bad guy ends up getting away that he had him pinned and he turns and looks at Colossus and he looks back at that and his eyes get super rounded and he does like these quadruple takes back and forth. But it's so funny because, like you said, his face, his mannerisms, not necessarily his face, but his mask, his eyes, and his mannerisms give everything away as to what he's feeling in that moment. And it's just so hilarious because not many people can do that. Not many people are gifted
in
that
way. All.
And I find the whole entire idea of this film just hilarious.
Spencer, if you had to break down this film into like, what is the thing that just stuck out the most to you? Either like your most favorite thing, funniest moment, like what is it that really to you kind of sealed the deal once you saw the whole film? Because you own the film. Like you decided then to eventually purchase it. Mm-hmm. What prompted that?
I think it's probably the way that the whole story just flows together, really. Because like it's just from like moment to moment, from joke to joke, and it's not like it doesn't wear on you or anything like that.
Yeah.
It just flows really nicely together. And you don't really see that super often with like just like comedy and action mixed together like that. And it worked really well.
Yeah, I like that too. There's definitely like oddly enough, a professionalism. Like there's, for as irreverent and ridiculous and inappropriate as most
very
of this movie is,
very to 11.
I mean, basically start to finish. I mean, basically. Yeah. But still, there's something so respectable, dare I say, about how professionally stitched together all the components are.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could easily have been a train wreck. Easily.
100%. This could have totally fit right into that wheelhouse of where that first X-Men Origins Wolverine film fell off of.
Just a mess.
And I think the fact that really, the one fact that really makes this stand out is the actor's commitment to making sure this character is portrayed correctly. I mean, if anybody, we could look across the entire nerd universe and look at everybody who has been a fan of Deadpool and everybody who saw that X-Men Origins film and got pissed off and was like, never again am I ever going to watch anything from Fox, especially if they're going to do that to my Deadpool, and kind of have that like hurt, stab in the back feeling. Because at the beginning of that film, you had Ryan Reynolds, who was perfect. He looked perfect. He was acting perfect. We were like, yes, if they turn him into Deadpool in this film, it'll be so great. And they stab you in the back. I honestly don't think that any of us, anybody in that nerd universe, could have felt more stabbed in the back than Ryan Reynolds.
For sure.
Yeah.
Because he's the one who wanted to make that character work in that film. He's the one who was also a fan of that character before any of these films had been done. And he's the one who had to stand there with his mouth sewn shut and knives coming out of his hands and laser beams coming out of his eyes.
Literally did not make any sense.
And
at all.
It was ridiculous. And so you look at all that and you wonder and you're like, all right, how much of a commitment does somebody have to be able to go through that, see somebody who you portrayed be totally done wrong because of whatever the writers wanted to do, and still feel like you need to do this right. He needed to do all of this over. He needed to do right by the fans, right for himself. I mean, that's some real, like, below surface level type of commitment. Like, that's all the way deep rooted. And it's very respectable. I love what this film does as it portrays the character. But I think what stands out more for me, more than anything else, and even more so for the second film to come, is how much Ryan Reynolds is committed to bringing the same level of fun and excitement and expectations for a comic book character that was made to be seen on the big screen.
It really, in many ways, reminds me of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, because
100%.
Hugh Jackman was originally not the first actor cast in the role. He took over from What's-His-Face, who was the bad guy in Mission Impossible 2, because the reshoots for Mission Impossible 2, which still ended up being a terrible movie, in my opinion, needed him to be fully in. You know, he was already committed to the reshoots, and thus A Star Was Born, with Hugh Jackman as Wolverine, because that was not going to be originally be the case. But then once he was Wolverine, and because he's such a likable guy, and he actually kind of humbly respects his celebrity, mm-hmm. rather than seeing it as some tool to leverage, you know, for influence or notoriety or whatever. He respects his fans. He wants to make sure his fans are happy with the way that he portrays another extremely fan favorite character, Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
Wolverine was the popular one until Deadpool took over as the popular one.
Yeah.
So the way that we've watched Hugh Jackman really work to honor the legacy of that character and fully see things through with that character from a position of, you know, humility and excitement, you're seeing something very, very similar with Ryan Reynolds, you know, with this Deadpool role. And I think it's really cool because, you know, you do have your MCU performers who, to varying degrees, they do have like an affinity for their character. They like playing the character, but oftentimes you hear about, well, when are the contracts up, and
yeah.
are they going to renew, and why would they even want to? Are they tired of playing the character or whatever? You never got that from Hugh Jackman. He never said, I'm tired of playing the character. Eventually he said, we've found a good spot to end my run as the character that makes sense, and I want to do it well. And, you know, that then you got Logan. And here, I mean, Ryan Reynolds, he fought for the role for so long, for the role to be done right, for the character to be really embodied the way that he appears on the page now on screen. You know, there's no talk of like, oh, you only have one more of these in you. Like, you have this feeling that he could go for years and years and years and be happy as a clam.
Yeah.
If people continue to respond well.
And I think that's one of the things that continues to draw people, and that's one of the things that continues to draw us in, is it's not so much of how bombastic you can make the film look, and you can make it, you know, with all these explosions. I mean, that's completely where X-Men The Last Stand went wrong, is they tried to go full-blown all out, and they totally missed the overall story. They missed the point of the film, of the storyline, of the franchise. And with Logan, with Wolverine, that whole storyline, it stayed on track all the way up to a beautiful finale. And I think that's what Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, as Wade Wilson, is doing and will continue to do, because, like I said, this man was made to play this character. So, talking about a little bit of last thoughts and whatnot as we wrap this whole thing up, Spencer, what were some of the standout parts for you in this film? Like, what was one of your favorite scenes?
You shouldn't have started with me.
Chad,
I have a standout scene.
Go for it.
I remember seeing this scene in the theater, and just, I loved every second of it, which is the debate between Deadpool and Colossus on the freeway, when Ajax is like speared through the shoulder on the side of the road, and they basically have this whole like, you should join the X-Men, and no, I'm not going to do that. And ultimately Ajax gets away, and then eventually Deadpool proceeds to break himself against Colossus's organic steel like skin and doesn't stop.
No.
Like all the way to the point that he's going to see if he can kick him with his other with his
leg.
Only leg that's still working. I loved it in the theater. Mm-hmm. I loved it every time I've seen the movie since. We watched it again, you know, over the weekend. I loved it again. I could probably watch that particular sequence, I don't know, 20 times in a row before I got tired of it. It's so funny to me. Like, what an idiot. Like, you know it's not going to work, but you keep doing it anyway. I mean, it's, you know, it's like Monty Python level.
Oh, 100%. I think one of my standout parts... Tis but a flesh wound. I think one of the standout parts for me was that entire montage of him going through the henchmen, the minions, and just the funny ways of him killing people. Like, like you're about to get killed by a Zamboni! And it's just like... I'm about to run you over in 5 minutes. And the whole, like, with him and the girl, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, I don't want to fight you, but you're girls and blah, blah, blah. And it's just so great. And it illustrates how versatile and how improvised a lot of that comedy had to be. Like, I would have loved to be in that editing room to see all the stuff they actually cut so that I could see all the things that they didn't put in the movie that he said. Because I know there had to be a ton of other stuff that he said that was hilarious. So, Spence, are you ready now?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, he's ready.
Yeah.
All right, Spence, what was one of your favorite parts or series of favorite parts?
Two separate ones.
Okay.
One is the fourth wall break inside a fourth wall break.
Oh, yeah.
Which somehow equals 16 walls because that's how buildings work.
Exactly.
That was pretty good. And then just most of his conversations with Leslie Uckhams.
Blind Al.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And the baby hand.
The baby hand.
The baby hand crest on the face.
Or just creepy.
Or the putting together, the whole conversations about the IKEA furniture.
IKEA furniture.
Anything's better than the, I couldn't even begin to remember.
Yeah, I
was like.
And they just roll those things off their tongue.
I was like, I barely have enough time to remember what I'm going into IKEA to buy. I don't know the names like that. Anything's better than the Bernal or the whatever. So, obviously, the film's a great movie. If you haven't seen it yet, you should see it, especially before this Friday comes out, because Deadpool 2 debuts this Thursday night, Friday, this opening weekend. So if you haven't got your tickets, get your tickets. And if you haven't seen this film, check it out. Let us know your thoughts on our Facebook page at facebook.com/philosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. Real quick, around the table, let's kind of give our last little monocles. Obviously, it passes for all of us, so that's an easy one to go through. But monocles.
Such a formality for such an informal film.
Truth. Spencer, how many monocles does it get?
This movie gets 4 monocles from me.
4 monocles.
4.
Wow.
It's pretty great.
I will give it 4.5.
Wow.
I thought it was fun. I thought it was inventive. I thought it really broke a lot of different box, you know, formulas that we had when it came to films, especially superhero films. And I can't wait to continue seeing that formula, those formulas be broken for other opportunities. So I give it 4.5. Chad?
Very interesting. Yeah, I was also going to give it 4 because he breaks the fourth wall. I think it's only appropriate.
4 for 4. Well, that about wraps up this episode. Remember, you can check out all of our previous episodes at filmlosophers.com, where you can see all our wonderful episodes and even the episode that we were talking about earlier in this episode. So that's kind of like an inception, because we're talking about an episode within this episode.
No, let's not even.
Before we go, we're going to let you know of a couple upcoming weekend releases. We got Book Club debuting this Friday. I'm just reading
okay.
What came out. Book Club.
Book Club.
We've only spent the past hour talking about Deadpool 2 coming out this weekend, but we're going to lead with Book Club.
Exactly. Show Dogs, First Reformed, and Deadpool 2.
Save the best for last.
Exactly. So, like we said, let us know what you thought about the film on our Facebook page or Twitter page, and we'd love to hear everything that you have to say about it, because, honestly, we thrive on conversation. This was a great conversation here, and we have a special piece of information for you that will actually break to you in our extra credit episode.
Hey,
we'll let you know about that as soon as you head on over. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
class dismissed.